Cultured Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Virtual Reality Church.
Welcome to our virtual church.
Is there some type of way for a virtual congregation?
You're not a congregation if you don't congregate.
When you combine this access with the loss of the local, I become my own confession, and I go around the world wide web listening for echoes that say back to me what I've already decided to believe.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is this missing from your Christian faith? This is Wretched Radio. You say what? Glad you asked. Yesterday on this here Wretched Radio program, I shared a little bit of an article from Virgil Walker at G3 Ministries regarding the subject of pornography. Don't panic. It's not just going to be about porn. It is going to be about an aspect, not the totality, but an aspect of Christianity that I wonder if it is missing in your life. I wouldn't paint any broad brush strokes and say this is missing in a lot of evangelicalism, because I haven't surveyed all of evangelicalism. So we will just do a self-survey. Is this aspect of Christianity missing? Martin Luther famously, supposedly said, the Christian walk is like a drunken man on a horse, falls off the left side, gets up, climbs on the horse, falls off the right side. It's really easy to land in a ditch, and we don't want to do that. But just because there are risks to walking the Christian life in a balanced fashion, that does not mean that we don't attempt to do so, because we could fall off the other side. No matter, if you aren't walking the line rightly, and I'm not talking about sanctification, I'm just talking about theologically. I'm talking about understanding the Christian faith and how God is and who Jesus is. If you don't walk that line, you're in a ditch. So we shouldn't be terrified to explore if there's maybe something missing, because there might be a bit of a pitfall involved. A number of years ago, 15 perhaps, maybe 20 years ago. Let's say 15. Maybe somebody has got a better history of this than I do, but I'm going to give Tully and Chavijan credit for the Hyper Grace movement. He's the fellow who really popularized it. His preaching, I think it was either Ephesians or Colossians. It was some really good stuff. And it magnified grace. And I think it was, a lot of it was in a good way. But it went too far. And it turned grace into antinomianism. It turned grace into, we don't need to worry about sin, righteousness, judgment, because we've got grace. And that trend was relatively popular. And I think people now hopefully have found their balance. But having said that, we don't want to lose sight of how amazing grace is, right? So we don't see the hyper grace movement and recoil to the no grace movement. We don't want to do that. We got to find our balance on this. And I think the same thing is true when it comes to motivation. Why do you fight sin? Why do you try to be godly? Why do you seek to have your marriage play a part in God's cosmic drama? The husband plays the role of Jesus. The woman plays the role of the church. What's your motivation for all of this? And I wonder if in part, we haven't forgotten a particular aspect of who God is and what he wants for us. And maybe, just maybe, we don't have a tank full of fuel to fight and battle sin like we once did. Let me share with you from this article what I'm talking about. I think Virgil makes the point clear. He's writing in the context of pornography. And as I mentioned yesterday, I just went, oh, good. This is so refreshing to read, because it isn't just a scold of pornography. Should there be a scold of pornography? Absolutely. Dude, you're acting like a dirtbag. Seriously, get your eyes off of that trash. That stands, and we shouldn't apologize for that. But I wonder if, in our zeal for sanctification, we haven't forgotten another motivation. I think there's actually a couple. One would be rewards. One would be crowns. I don't think it should be our primary motivation. I think that's really clear in Matthew 19. When Peter asks, hey, what's our reward for leaving everything in response to the rich young ruler who wouldn't leave everything? And Jesus said, you're going to be rewarded, but he tells a parable, watch your tood. Don't be seeking to do things rightly just because you get a reward. Now, that isn't to say that getting a reward can't be a motivation. I think it can be. I just don't think it should be a primary motivation. It's better than nothing to be motivated by God's benevolent rewarding of his faithful children. That can be an awesome motivation, but I don't think it should be the biggie. I think the big motivation should be what God has done for me. Why on earth wouldn't I want to be his obedient child? But in that, I think, is buried another motivation. And that is the motivation of enjoying good things. Now, by that, I don't mean a fine meal. I'm not talking about Diet Mountain Dew and cherry Twizzlers. I'm not talking about that. Those are very fine things. Those are good things. But I'm not talking about those things. I'm not talking about vacations or amassing stuff. I'm talking about the things that are lofty and that are good and that are transcendent and ethereal that we should be setting before men and women to say, God wants these good things for you. All right, sorry, I'm going to dip into Sunday's sermon. Jesus tipped tables in the temple. It's Matthew chapter 21. His ministry of traveling around Israel has ended. So the itinerant part is done. And he zeroes in on Jerusalem. And he, go read it. It is, go, if you can do three chapters of reading, do it in one sitting. Read 21, 22, and 23. Because Jesus enjoins the battle with the religious leaders. He just goes after them, one after another. He enters the city. It is a humble way, but nevertheless, it was an attention-getting way as people are shouting and laying down the palm branches. You don't think the chief priests, the rulers, and the Pharisees and the scribes knew about it? Of course they did, because the very next story is Jesus goes into the temple and cleanses it again. John chapter 2, he did it the first time. Matthew chapter 1, this is the second time because the details are so different. He did it again. By the way, I learned something interesting. This is why sometimes reading a lot on culture and context regarding your verses is so helpful. Do you know who was running the mercenary system, the foreign currency exchange system, the buying of sacrifice system that was happening in the court of Gentiles in the Temple Mount in Matthew 21, which caused Jesus to tip the place over? Annas and his five sons. Well, isn't that intriguing? Who is this Annas? Well, he was the chief priest when Jesus was born. He was not the chief priest, but he was still a wielder of influence, most likely running the mercenary enterprises in the court of Gentiles. And guess who Jesus is brought to first when his trial begins? Annas. Acts chapter 4. Peter and John are arrested for preaching the gospel. In front of whom do they appear? Annas. You don't suppose that he was agitated at this table tipper, Jesus Christ, who came to make his father's house a house of prayer and not a mercenary endeavor? And he will tip over tables when he sees impurity in his house. He will tip over tables when he sees haughtiness. He will tip over tables when he doesn't see prayer, when he doesn't see praise, when he doesn't see healing. And I'm not talking about physical healings. I'm talking about a sanctification healing process. That's what he desires for his temple. Well, that temple's gone. Certainly, he desires those things for his church. But furthermore, he still desires those things for his temple. And who are those temples? You are a temple of the Holy Spirit. And Jesus is zealous, therefore, just like he was for his house, he's zealous for his new house, you. He wants you to be praising and praying and to be humble and to be serving and to be battling sin and to be assured of yourself. He wants those. He's zealous for you. He's zealous for you. God is zealous for you. By the way, zeo is the word. It's a Greek word. It's onomatopoetic. It sounds like something. They thought sounded like water that is boiling over in a pot. Seo. So it's somebody who's boiling over, somebody who's hot, somebody who's fervent. They're zealous. And that's what Jesus was for his temple. That's what Jesus is for his church. And that's what he's zealous for you. He's zealous that you would enjoy the finest things, not just good, not just better, the absolute premium, the best is what he wants for you. He wants those things. And that means now when you engage in your battle against sin, it's not just, it should be, yes, I get to do the best thing and not turn on my computer and look at smut. This is Wretched Radio.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect his flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's honestly judging how we judge. Listen, if you're tired of watching your loved ones fall for every wind of doctrine that blows through TikTok, this resource could be an answered prayer. 13 powerful lectures that will revolutionize how you view biblical discernment. Plus, because we love you, there's a free study guide included. It's time to stop tiptoeing and start standing firm. Your family and friends need you anchored in God's Word now more than ever at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
The life issue. We cannot disengage from the battle. And there is a way that you can win a life and rescue a soldier who's about to be executed through abortion. Preborn.org/wretched. Ultrasounds still save lives. These pregnancy centers that progressives would love to shut down or arrest people for praying in front of abortuaries, they're still doing excellent work and babies are still being rescued. This is a tangible way to save a life. An ultrasound is $28. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. Want to engage in the battle? This ain't about politics. This is about saving those who are staggering to the slaughter, period. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Thanks to faithful supporters just like you, our new Fortis Institute podcasts aren't just reaching people, they're making waves. Every single one of our new shows ranks at least in the top 10% of all podcasts worldwide, some climbing even higher than that. From Integrated with Dr. John Krotz to Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson, these programs are doing exactly what they were intended to do. They're touching lives and they're transforming hearts. But here's the thing, we can't continue this vital work without your help. As we face this brave new world together, I want to ask if you would consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Only if you're already faithfully giving to your local church, though, and not strapped by any type of unmanaged debt. If those areas in your life are in order, would you consider joining us? Because your support will help us produce even more life-changing content. Just visit FortisInstitute.org right now. That's FortisInstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Know your church fathers. Basil of Caesarea was the bishop of Caesarea in the 4th century. He was a defender of orthodoxy and wrote several important works proving the divinity of the Holy Spirit and refuting the Arian heresy. Most importantly, he introduced the Trinitarian formula, describing God as one being and three persons. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
May I make a confession, please? This is Wretched Radio. Here's my confession. Anytime when I'm standing in front of this here microphone and the sermon from Sunday that I preached comes to mind, I always hesitate to use it. I don't know why. It's like, well, that was for church and this is just a different thing. And it's kind of like I'm cheating because I'm using this for that. And I feel kind of bad about using it. But I'm not sure I should feel terrible because I think if nothing else, it demonstrates a truism. And that truism is garbage in, garbage out. You are what you eat. Do you know why the sermon keeps coming to my mind? It's because I've been studying it intensely. That's why I've been thinking on it really hard. And so it's there. And what is there is what comes out here. And I share that not merely to be confessional, but to perhaps be an encouragement to you. What are you feeding yourself with? What is your diet, your daily diet? Now, your ongoing consumption of God's word, truth, preaching, being involved in your church, reading good books about Jesus Christ. Well, how much stuff is going in there about them? Because I'm telling you, the more of that goes in, the more of it will come out, which means because you have limited capacity, a lot of the garbage that was in there just gets pushed out. It just gets shoved to the background at least or entirely eradicated. It just gets vacated. It is, and you are just filled with thoughts that are pure, lovely, and worthy of praise. So maybe a challenge to consider your diet and a challenge courtesy of Virgil Walker at G3 to be motivated to do that, to consume more of Christ by staring at his face in the word of God because it's so good for you. It's good for you. Come on, it's doubtful you put much into your body that you know is terrible for you. That food, is it true that we pulled that out of the garbage? I think I'll have that. No, it's like, ugh, I don't want that. I want good food because it's better for you. Now, that's true of nutrition, but it's also true of spiritual things. What you put into your eyeballs, what you consume, it gets in there. It really does. And what makes it so insidious is it's not like it's bad for you necessarily. It's like it's not like it's a bad thing, but it's not the best thing. So for instance, I might get into trouble with this one just because I might run out of gas with the illustration, but like watching football, look, everybody's got discretionary time. You watch football if you choose to. We do. We'll watch a little bit of football. We'll consume some of that stuff, but if that's all I'm consuming, there's stuff that's getting in there. I promise you, there's stuff that's getting in there. You know what might be a better example would be daytime television. I think it was last week when it was really cold and we wouldn't be safe, so we couldn't leave our houses. And I think I turned on the TV. It might have been to check on the Australian Open. Just to see who was winning and who was losing. And it was like some sort of talk show or some one of these women that does these stuff. And it's like, it is so tinny and it is so trumped up. And I don't mean that in a presidential kind of way. I mean, you know, just the hype of it. And that gets in just like social media and Instagram gets in. Everybody's beautiful. Everybody's perfect. Every meal looks better than what I've got in front of me. It's just all better, better, better. And that gets in there. It starts to infect your thinking and your emotions and your will. You can shove all of that out by having an imbalanced diet. Put in less world, put in more God, and you'll be controlled by him. And the motivation, among other things, first of all, we're commanded to do these things and we want to be obedient children. But I think that we can also be motivated by God is pleased and he rewards us when we're tired. I got to tell you, I know a guy who reads his Bible before falling asleep. And sometimes he finds his head bobbing and jerking. Now, is God pleased that I fall asleep reading his word? Well, I don't think it thrills him, but I wonder if he sees at least somebody who's struggling to read it and let that be the last thought of the day. And that he's pleased in our striving to be obedient. And for that, he rewards us. But because of this article from Virgil, I think we need to remember another motivating factor. And that is doing what we're told is so good for us. Isn't it funny? We tell our kids what to do. We control our little ones so much, don't we? Why? Because you know what's best. And then you can have a kid that they fall on the floor and they throw themselves and flail around and scream and shout and whine and pout. But you know better. You know better. And you look at them and you go, eh, you just don't know much. Ditto God. He knows better. Do it. He knows better. Enjoy the good thing. Doesn't feel like the good thing. It is the good thing. God said so. Do it. Virgil Walker, The Fight for Purity. A Guide for Single Men to Honor God and Build Faithful Marriages, presents it in a positive light. What makes purity so significant? It reveals who sits on the throne of your hearts. All right, that's elevating immediately. You look at porn and sits on the throne of your heart. Wouldn't it be better to have King Jesus there? It's not just about what you avoid. It's about what you pursue. And it's about what you are becoming. The fight for purity is to fight for clear vision, to see God more fully, to reflect his character more faithfully, and to worship him more wholly. Pornography is a predator. So Virgil struck the balance here. It's like, we're not going to just go to the ditch of, hey, it's just good, so maybe you won't think about sinning. No, there can be strong rebukes. There should be strong rebukes. We don't want to lose our balance on this. And so that's what this article, let's not sugarcoat this, said Virgil. Pornography is a predator. It's not just a bad habit. It's a weapon of the enemy. And it's designed to erode your soul, distort your view of women, and destroy your intimacy with God. Now, what is better? A distorted view of women, a weak relationship with your God, and a shriveled soul, or to be a strong man, to be a strong woman who's convictional, who seeks to do godly things, whose relationship with God isn't tarnished with all of the ongoing sin. Which is better? God's right. Don't do those things. You can exchange porn for whatever it is, the bottle, drugs, whatever your bag is. It's just not as good. He wants better things. He's zealous for you to have them. The hookup culture reduces something sacred to a soulless transaction, leaving scars that often linger far longer than the thrill of the moment. The world's version of freedom is slavery. True freedom comes from living within the boundaries of God's commands. You want true freedom? Obey God. It's that simple. We just like to think, well, I'm nobody's fool. I'm in control of this stuff. No, if you're caught in a sin like pornography, you are in shackles. And being obedient breaks the chains and liberates you. And Jesus will give you the strength because he's zealous for you. If God has called you to marriage, then your fight for purity today is not just about you. It's about your future wife and family. That's a good word. Single people, this is your training ground. Every temptation resisted, every boundary maintained, every habit of discipline cultivated is a step toward becoming the man who can lead his wife with integrity and grace. Want to be that dude? Stop. Do what he says, or he'll tip over your table. That's a threat. Jesus is so zealous for you. Do you think that somehow he just had such a bug against the religious leaders of his day that were making his house a mercenary endeavor, a den of robbers? He's zealous for it, and he tipped over tables. And he will do that in you, his temple, because he wants best. See it that way. See the threatenings Absolutely. See the rewards positively, but also know that your choice, whether you sin or not, is a choice of awful or the best. You choose your way, it's the worst. You choose Jesus' way, and it is always the best way. The fight for purity, Virgil, is not just about avoiding sin. It's about embracing a greater purpose. It's about living for the glory of God and preparing for the rewards that come with faithfulness. That's exact. Rise up. Reject the lies of this world. Fight for the glory of your King and the good of your future. Purity is not a burden. It is a banner of allegiance to the one who is worthy of all honor and praise. That should be at least one of your motivations. The good things that only Jesus can provide. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. Well, we start with the CIA, which has finally caught up to what many Americans knew through simple common sense in 2020. The COVID-19 pandemic most likely originated from a lab leak in Wuhan, China. The revelation comes 5 years after major media outlets labeled such suggestions as racist and xenophobic, while social media platforms actively censored discussion of the theory. The agency claims no new intelligence prompted this shift. They simply took a closer look at the same evidence they've had all along. Ordinary citizens who faced ridicule and censorship for questioning the narrative might be forgiven for finding this timing particularly interesting. Well, Target Corporation, once a flagship of corporate wokeness, has announced a dramatic scaling back of its DEI initiatives. The retailer that previously championed controversial gender ideology products will end its 3-year DEI goals and cease reporting to external diversity groups. The reversal follows a $12 billion market value drop after their Pride merchandise controversy, proving that ideological overreach carries real financial consequences. Yeah, that usually happens when your opinions override your sense of, I don't know, being in business. The Department of Justice has dropped its case against Dr. Ethan Hamm, the whistleblower who exposed Texas Children's Hospital's secret gender transition program. Despite the hospital's public claim of compliance with state laws protecting minors, Dr. Hamm revealed evidence of ongoing procedures, and the Biden administration responded by sending FBI agents to harass those who spoke up. Now, in a signal that protecting children takes priority over protecting institutions, the Trump administration has effectively vindicated the whistleblower's courage. And Hollywood made history last week, though not perhaps in a way many may celebrate. The Academy Awards nominated a male for Best Actress, the first time a biological male has competed in that category. Yeah, there's a reason why. The nomination comes for musical drama about a Mexican cartel leader who transitions and helps gang violence victims. And in a testament to social media addiction, enterprising individuals are attempting to sell iPhones with TikTok installed for up to $25,000. Following the app's removal from the American app stores. While most of these optimistic listings haven't attracted serious buyers, the desperation to maintain access to the Chinese-owned platform speaks volumes about its grip on people. The Supreme Court recently upheld the U.S. ban on the app, though President Trump has moved to review the appropriate path forward. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can also subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Know your reformers. Martin Luther was a German monk and professor who was plagued with doubt about his salvation. When he finally read the Bible for himself, he rediscovered the doctrine of justification by grace through faith. His bold witness for biblical truth was the spark that ignited the Protestant Reformation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Now we're talking. Now we're talking. This is Wretched Radio. I don't know if you have been aware, there's a new pro-life skirmish that is taking place, mostly online, but also in the halls of power, regarding the issue of IVF, in vitro fertilization. What do we do with this new technology that allows a couple that heretofore could not get pregnant to have a baby, their own baby. That sounds so awesome. And yet there are some people who are doing some thinking and some investigating as to what this process is and whether or not it meets biblical muster. An article was just written by Emma Waters. It's called Biblical Ethics and In Vitro Fertilization. And she did, so far, of all of the things that I've read, the finest job of laying out all of the issues in a way that doesn't feel condemnatory or like insensitive, because these are sensitive subjects, are they not? We're talking about a good longing, want to have kids, want to have grandkids. Those are good things. And when God doesn't open the womb and you hear there's an opportunity for that door to be flung open, oh, it's very appealing. And yet, there are ethical issues surrounding it. And Emma, I think, did a bang-up job compiling those in a way that allows us to lead the conversation on this new pro-life issue. This is happening more. Our current president, he is just enthusiastic about IVF. Uh-oh, is that a problem or is that a good thing? And the answer, if you want the bottom line and the spoiler in advance, it kind of depends a lot. It depends on all of the considerations you're about to hear. But I think ultimately it's going to depend on whether or not people die in the process of a new life being created. Let's jump into the article, shall we? The premise for this is that conception is when, that's when human life begins. At the moment of fertilization, that little teeny tiny thing is, it's everything you are. Everything that you are today was in that joining of sperm and egg. Everything that you are now was there. In other words, a conception, worth and dignity. Thus, IVF does not deal with potential human life, but actual human life. You could gloss over that line real quickly, but I think that's important to remember when you're talking about IVF. And please note, if you're struggling with this, I'll try to present this, I hope, in a way that doesn't sound like I'm slinging arrows at you. We're trying to lay this thing out for your consideration, because I think there might be a way to do IVF without sinning. But I don't think that's going to be the predominant way that it is used. And we need to remember what Emma just wrote, and that is when you're talking about IVF, you're not talking about a potential baby. You're talking about a baby in a petri dish. It simply has a different host than the uterine wall, but it is still a human being. So the stakes of this conversation are not low. It's not a possible human. It's not a potential baby. It actually is. She writes, most embryos created in IVF are destroyed, frozen, or failed to implant because they want you to have a lot of them to implant as many as possible and then potentially do selective reduction so you don't deliver six babies. Or you create a bunch, they put them underneath the microscope to pick the one that they think genetically will have the highest success of being healthy and then implant that. And what happens to the other ones? That's a big issue. And so there's three considerations if you're pondering IVF. One's intentions behind the action itself, and the resulting outcome. Those are the three angles that she takes in this article. Because it's a good desire, but that doesn't mean we can use any means necessary to achieve a happy end. A happy end is a baby that is born. We celebrate that. Whatever the conception method was, it's still an image bearer of God, and we celebrate that child. But that doesn't justify doing it at any means necessary. Left unchecked, the temptation to idolize one's fertility is one of the most powerful forces in the world. Since the fall of humanity, this idolization has led people to control by playing God rather than steward and being faithful with what God has given us. Rachel, jealous of her own sister's fertility, what did she rely on? Her maidservants and mandrakes, which apparently was a fertility stimulant, or it was thought to be that, to bear more children with Jacob. despite her efforts, God still gave Leah more children. Their desire for children and the intention behind their actions reflected God's covenantal promise. It does not justify pursuing any means necessary when it violates God's teaching on the sanctity of marriage and life. We saw that with Sarah, didn't we? She wanted that baby that was promised. So she had her husband sleep with the maidservant, which, by the way, apparently was a pretty normative way for some married people to have babies. If she couldn't, they borrowed the womb of the maidservant. Now, you would say, well, that was wrong, and you would be right. And I couldn't argue, but they got a baby. Sarah got a baby. Yes, she sure did. And look at what that's brought us in the Middle East as the wild donkey continues to rage. We can't use the end to justify the means. Israel turned from worshiping the one true God to worshiping idols. And who was the false god that Israel most often turned to? Asherah, the goddess of fertility. The Israelites would bring harvest sacrifices or perform sexual acts in front of these false goddesses in hopes that they would receive fruitful crops or the blessing of children. And you would say, well, that's wrong. And you couldn't argue, but having a baby, they had a baby. It worked. Just because it worked doesn't mean that it is right. Let's consider actions. Again, this is from Emma Waters. The use of pre-implementation genetic testing, that's PGT, is an embryonic genetic screening test that gets done. And it allows the doctors to determine the sex of the embryo, the potential health, Down syndrome, single gene disorder, cystic fibrosis. 75% of all fertility clinics in the U.S. offer this. 73% of these clinics allow parents to select or discard based on if the child is a boy or a girl. Oh. Now, I know if you're considering in vitro, you're saying, well, we wouldn't do that. I know we're talking about the bigger issue of IVF. And if we are going to, as pro-life Christians, say it's a good thing in general or a bad thing in general, the way that it is currently being used in general, lives are being sacrificed. Now, that doesn't mean every Christian who does this is guilty of that. So please hear that. But we're talking about the institution of IVF. Is it in general something that we should be supporting enthusiastically like our new president does? It's natural for parents to desire a healthy child, writes Emma. And their intention may be to protect their children from difficult diseases or pain. But the action rejects the inherent worth and dignity of each child. So you would choose the value of it. You're placing a value on the child by selecting this one and not that one. Whose role is that? Whose job is it to make those assessments? God's. And how does he see every fertilized egg as an image bearer? Equal dignity, equal value, equal worth. So instead of receiving the child as a gift from God, regardless of health complications or gender, this testing rejects the image of God and what Scripture teaches on the value of all life. A lot of parents reject PGT. And to them, I say, well done. And they don't discard any of the embryos that they create. That is a good thing. Unfortunately, it's not the majority thing. Then there's the question, if it's morally acceptable to freeze embryonic human life, that's standard practice. Fertilize 10 eggs, use 3. What happens to the 7? They go into a freezer. And I don't think that I don't think I've heard anybody ask this question. Is that right? But you can't, those babies can be thawed and they can become babies. It happens. It really does. It maybe seems like Frankenstein-y too, but it really does happen and it really does work. But the question that gets begged in all of that is that even right? It would be like me saying, okay, so, I want Jimmy to live a year longer someday. So I'm going to put him in a meat locker for 365 days. and just if he won't be able to move, he'll just be frozen. You'd go, I don't think that you should be doing that to a human being. And that is why it's important to remember when you're talking about IVF, you're not talking about potential life. You're putting a little Jimmy into a freezer. How'd you feel about that statement? I'm not sure that that really was beneficial for any of us, but that's what's happening. But alas, or a lad, there are more considerations as we Christians assume the role of leading the conversation about IVF. Next on Wretched Radio.
Big news from Fortis Institute. You know how we have eight fellows already bringing you free daily content at fortisplus.org? Well, starting February 7th, our very first fellowette will make her debut. Libby Glossett, one of the finest biblical counselors in the entire country, is coming on board. And you know, people might think we're trying to add a woman's voice to check some type of boxes or appease the feminists, but the truth is, we found one of this country's most incredible biblical counselors who just happens to be a woman. And her way of applying God's word to real life is extremely powerful. She'll be launching a weekly podcast and creating resources just for women. So if there's a woman in your life looking for solid biblical teaching, tell them to mark their calendars for February 7th and head to fortisplus.org or go ahead and download Fortis Plus on their mobile device right now and be ready for Libby Glossin. fortisplus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Knowledge is power, but only when applied. Like a story I heard about on the radio the other day, this woman worked a job for a tech company previously, and she stopped working at some point to be a mother. Years later, realized that the stock options they gave her were worth millions. Imagine having a bank account filled with millions of dollars, never using it. Well, that's theology without application. Introducing Integrated with Dr. John Krotz.
We'll help you connect head and heart, turning Bible knowledge into life-changing action.
Thank you, Dr. Krotz. And at Fortis Institute, listen, we're standing strong in a world that's losing its weight. Our name means strong in Latin, and that's our promise to you. Visit fortisinstitute.org or download the Fortis Plus app today and start listening to Integrated with Dr. John Krotz, and then join us in standing firm no matter the cost, because in a world that's falling apart, we're building something strong. FortisInstitute.org. It's FortisInstitute.org.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the cornerstone. When laying a foundation, every stone must be aligned in reference to the cornerstone. God is building his church as a holy temple, and as believers, we are being brought into line with the cornerstone, Jesus Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's time for Christians to be leading the way, with or without Michael Youssef. I might add, this is Wretched Radio. I think that's the name of his program, right? Leading the Way with Michael Youssef. I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure you're correct.
Or is that Leading the Way, or is that Chip Ingram? One of those guys. I think, when you look up Leading the Way, did you know there's an In Touch magazine? Charles Stanley's ministry is called In Touch, and there's an In Touch magazine that came out after In Touch was alive and well. I think they tried to get him to stop. Because I don't know what that magazine was about, but it probably wasn't about the Bible. Who's leading the way, Jimmy?
Michael Youssef.
Michael Youssef. With or without Michael, we are going to lead the way in the conversation about life. All aspects of it. All aspects. Now, we're not going to become enamored with one aspect or another. No, the totality of the life issue. That means end of life issues, too. That means the care for the people who are alive, not just for the people whose lives are being taken in the womb or in a petri dish. We are the ones who should be promoting every aspect of life. And an article by Emma Waters dealing with the ethics of in vitro fertilization, I found supremely helpful because she does her level best to not come, you know, like sharp and at you for this stuff. Because she understands the longing of your heart to have a baby. And that it's hard to hear these conversations and read an article like this. But it's a subject that can't be ignored. And we can't put blinders on and pretend that there are not some ethical components that are anti-biblical in IVF. And so it is. We're making our way through her treatment of this subject very helpfully. The question of whether or not to freeze embryonic human life is one that needs to be answered. Is it even right to do that? You're suspending the natural progression of a human being. So I think it was in this article. Maybe I read it someplace else. Imagine being in a freezer for like 10 years. Your life started 10 years ago, but it got kind of put on pause for 10 years. Now you're born into a different decade. How old are you, actually? Is that even right? While there's no set shelf life for a frozen embryo, most perish naturally after a few years. That's a big problem. And the process of freezing and unfreezing leads to further health complications, such as an increased risk of childhood cancer or heart problems. So there are increased risks in using IVF. A growing number of children will learn that they have unborn siblings frozen in nitrogen gas containers with parents now too old to gestate them. Well, there's a consideration, isn't it? You find out that you've got siblings that are at the IVF factory. What do you have a responsibility to them? Your parents can't bear those children anymore. In other words, there are implications to worldviews and these decisions. Got to wrestle. What do you do? What should we do? Do we have an obligation? That's my sibling. Should such siblings agree to gestate their own brothers and sisters once they're married? Well, that gets even stranger, does it not? Or do you stand by as they're given up for embryo adoption? Or do you say, go ahead, you can melt them and let them go? There's considerations in this conversation. Brings us to a broader question. The Bible presents a clear vision of the package deal of marriage, sex, and procreation. That is the pattern that we see from the beginning. One man, one woman, together, one flesh, union with the procreative act blessed by God to do what? To procreate, to make little image bearers. That's his design for it. Let's talk in vitro fertilization. It introduces a number of people to the contraceptive act, doesn't it? It introduces potentially other individuals. Now, there are people that are using IVF. They're not married. And so a woman, I've never understood this, but I think it simply reflects how women so desire to have babies and to be mothers that they're willing to use a stranger's sperm to make a baby. That's not the package deal that God has designed. That violates the pattern that is best for us. Malachi 2:15. Did he not make them one with a portion of the Spirit in their union? And what was the one God seeking? Godly offspring. So guard yourselves in your spirit and let none of you be faithless to the wife of your youth. That is as good a summary of all of the verses that talk about the package deal of marriage, one flesh, procreation, procreative act. IVF changes that package. technology renders intimacy unnecessary for procreation. And marriage has little bearing on those whose gametes are used. IVF thus decouples marriage from sex, sex from procreation, and if a donor egg or sperm is used, biology from parenthood. I know that maybe doesn't have a ton of force for most people, but that is a very powerful argument. That what IVF does, it pushes out elements. A man and a wife are not intimate to make that baby. That's not God's design. That's not the way God intended it. And this goes back to the conversation that we've been having here about what is good for us, what is best for us. It is best for a mommy and a daddy who are joined in a one flesh union to come together in a one flesh act to make a baby, an image bearer. That's the best. Anything else, not as good, to say the least. Such technology does not merely form individual behavior. It also shapes how cultures view children more broadly. This is such a good exploration of the issue on a more holistic level. How does IVF inform the world's thinking? It's a symbiotic relationship because I think the world's thinking informs IVF. But I think IVF also has an effect on the world, just like abortion does. When we have a low view of what is in the womb, it's only reinforced by making that act of murder legal. What does that say about the value of life? It diminishes it, and so does IVF. Now, the health risks that are involved. IVF increases maternal and neonatal health risks compared to naturally conceived children. You should know these numbers if you're pondering this. They have a higher likelihood of preterm birth, low birth weight, cerebral palsy, cancer, minor cleft palate, or congenital heart defect. These children are 4 times more likely to be a stillbirth, twice as likely to have autism, and a 44% chance of non-chromosomal birth defects. Mothers, the risk of hypertensive disorders, including preeclampsia, increases by about 50%. More likely to undergo medically necessary cesarean sections, experience higher rates of gestational diabetes, and their risk of severe maternal morbidity. Severe postpartum hemorrhage, ovarian hyperstimulation, severe preeclampsia, or eclampsia. Seizures also spikes. You need to know there are health risks involved. Now, I grant you, there's health risks in having a baby naturally. But a part of the conversation cannot be overlooking that those health risks are increased significantly. There's a world of difference. This is from Emma. There's a world of difference between accepting the risk of a disabled child, where that risk is natural, and ourselves imposing that risk in pursuit of our own purposes. It's risky business, and we need to be aware of that. And I think the Christian posture would have to accept, wait a second, if that puts my wife in harm's way, that's not going to happen. Not on my watch. Back to the article from Emma. Rather than pursue marriage and children in their early 20s and 30s, career-driven women may indefinitely delay childbearing. That's probably happening a lot. It encourages women to pursue marriage and children not as the cornerstone of their life, but to treat it as a capstone of their life. Once I get everything else, I get education, I get career, I get this much money, then I'll have kids. In other words, IVF does inform our thinking about life. Having said all that, and there's more, we need to be leading the way with this conversation. We celebrate life. We understand the longing for having children, but we cannot be utilitarians. We cannot let the ends justify the means. And I think that there's some other ethical conversations that need to happen, even when I think IVF can be done way more ethically than the majority route. There are Christian parents. No, it's like, nope, fertilize one egg. That's it. That's what gets implanted. It's expensive to do it that way. But I think that is a way that is far more ethical than all of the aspects and considerations of the general use of IVF. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.